What up, guys? Welcome back to the next episode of Primal Alchemy's Red Pill Initiation Hour, here with your host, Chris Story. Few things to touch base on before we kick today's episode off. First things first, I want to give you guys my love, thanks, and gratitude to each and every one of you that tunes in episode after episode, week after week, giving me a few hours of your day to help, well, you know, fulfill destiny, my destiny, which is to wake this planet up. And in doing so, I'm giving you the tools that you need to wake yourself up. And then once you wake yourself up, you save yourself, and we will save the world together. So yeah, I just want to give you a massive thanks, guys. Honestly, I couldn't do this without you. And please drop me a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. I ask it every episode. And again, just as soon as you listen to this, just jump on over to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and just leave me some feedback. Honestly, it makes the world of difference. Over the past month, yeah, quite a few of you have actually been doing so, and I can see it directly affect the metrics and statistics of the podcast. Like, the more reviews there are, good or bad, the more that increases the exposure and visibility of the podcast as a whole, and then that allows me to be able to touch more people and help them change themselves. And this is what we're doing this for. Although it is about us, it's also about the world as a whole as well. So just as we want to evolve our level of consciousness, that has a direct effect on evolving the level of collective consciousness as a species. So yeah, guys, just drop me a review. Then you're doing yourself and everybody else a justice in doing so. Anyway, I always give you guys a exclusive 10% discount code. That's the code REDPILL. That when used at checkout at primalalchemy.co.uk, you'll get an exclusive 10% discount off anything in your shopping basket at the time of purchase. So this is the perfect opportunity if you're brand new to the Primal Alchemy brand and you're tuning in for the first time and you don't know who I am or what the Primal Alchemy brand is about. Head over to the website and check it out and grab yourself our Vitruvian protein. So Vitruvian protein is our flagship organic whey protein superfood blend. It's forged with adaptogenic, nootropic, prebiotic herbs and other high vibrational superfoods that I source from all around the globe. Not only do I source all the ingredients myself, I then put it on my website on primalalchemy.co.uk where you can trace these ingredients back to their origin. I break down the formulas of every product that we launch and release and create so you can see exactly what's in the product at exactly the dosage that has been used in the formula. So there's no one else that's doing this, guys. Well, not that I'm aware of. So hopefully you appreciate this and hopefully that means something to you because I'm trying to make this brand as open, as transparent as possible. I walk this path of life with honor and integrity, and I'm not gonna, you know, step back in line when it comes to the business world and all of these preconceived ideas of how a business is supposed to operate, because I think that's bullshit. I think that's a dated paradigm that needs to change, and there needs to be other companies, especially within the health and fitness industry, because it's so important that real information shines through all of the disinformation, misinformation, all of the deceiving bullshit that's out there surrounding the confusion of what it means to be healthy. So yeah, check it out, guys. I really hope you appreciate the work that I've put in, and yeah, show a brother some love, eh? Again, if you're not on the market for an organic whey protein superfood blend, then check out our Ancestral Potential Coaching Programs. So this is your chance to work one-to-one with myself, be that through a bespoke exercise program, a bespoke nutritional program, or maybe you want to do some enlightened biohacking tutorials with myself. We've got it all. all on primalalchemy.co.uk. All right, guys, so moving on to today's episode, we have Mr. Steve Cotter. So some of you may be familiar with Steve, some of you may not. Steve is the director of the IKFF, which is the International Kettlebell and Fitness Federation. This was amazing for me, guys. You will know by now, if you followed me, that I'm quite the geek when it comes to kettlebells. That's my preferred style of training above all else. And Steve is the OG when it comes to the kettlebell world, kettlebell sport, and just overall an encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to fitness, health, fitness, mind, body, and soul. And what I originally thought was going to be a discussion about kettlebells and like training practices and protocols turned out to be something a little bit different. We discussed Steve's own journey through his path of becoming a kettlebell maestro. We discussed some philosophy concerning why do we exercise? Like, what is the intention behind it? Is it just for aesthetics? Or is there a deeper purpose behind it? And Steve had some pretty interesting answers to those questions. He's definitely like a Yoda of the health and fitness industry. And it was a pleasure to be able to have the chance to talk to him. And I'm hoping that you guys gain as much from this as I did being able to talk to him. So guys, I hope you enjoy. Remember, leave me some feedback at the end of the episode. And as always, Morpheus, you tell these fools what's up.
You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
As above, so below, what lies without resides within. Time for growth to begin. Mental, physical, and spiritual. We find balance with all three as we focus on totality. The whole, not the half. This is for those on a spiritual path. Looking for the clues to the answers of life. But the truth ain't always nice, so leave your ego at the door. Let your inner lion roar and your spirit soar as we go deep down to the molecular level. Tap into the body with some yogic breath. Throw in some calisthenics for a true strength test. Like the shamans of old, we use a nature to heal. With a little bit of DMT to reveal. This whole life journey is a little surreal. And your mind needs a leader, not a follower in life. Let your mind be the master and you pay a hefty price. This next 60 minutes is about self mastery. It's not an easy path and it's a lifelong journey, but we up to empower with this red pill initiation hour. With this red pill initiation hour, brought to you by Primal Alchemy.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Three, two, one, and oh shit, sweet Aries. Guys, we're back with episode 49 of the Red Pill Initiation Hour. Today's episode, guys, we are going to be going deep with one of my own personal heroes, someone I've looked up to for a very long time. And as always, the people that I've been getting on the podcast as of late, it's very surreal. Me being able to get to talk to them when at one point in time, I was just a kid out of school reading their books and studying their craft, and here I am today with the pleasure of being able to talk to him. So yeah, we're gonna jump straight on in. Today's guest is Mr. Steve Cotter. Steve is the founder of the IKFF, which is the International Kettlebell Fitness Federation, and he is pretty much the kingpin of the kettlebell world. He has been there, done that, got the t-shirt, made the t-shirt, and pretty much is the as close as you're going to get to the demigod of the functional fitness world. So it's a pleasure to have him on. And Steve, thanks for coming on, man.
It's nice to talk to you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all, Steve. And like I was briefly saying then, like I can remember back when I first started getting into fitness, I must have been about 15, 16 at the time. So it was about 10 years ago or so. And I remember I went off and I did my personal training qualification, which is like your run-of-the-mill shit that everyone has to go through. And afterwards, I got extremely interested in kettlebells. And no one was doing it in the UK at that time. And you'd get a few There's some like real lame ass kettlebells in the corner of every gym. And I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a try and see what this is about. Typed in kettlebells on the internet. And then there were videos of yourself, of Pavel, and some of the others that were really like the sort of forefathers of bringing kettlebells into the Western.
Yeah, it's OG. It's definitely OG. And yeah, there is a historical point when it all began. And then there was the early adapters. So I'm in that first batch of early adapters, you know. And there's a history to it. Definitely, I'm a part of that history. There's no denying that. You know, something I'm really, I don't want to say proud, but I'm very grateful for to be able, you know, and kettlebells, great. I still use kettlebells, you know, more than, I guess, 17 years now since I first tasted the kettlebell, you know. So I still use it. I still see its utility as well. Which I'm also really appreciative of that, because there's such things as trends. Trends usually come and go, you know. So far it's not a trend. So far it's here to stay. So that's something that I'm also really happy about, because you know, sometimes we fall into trends and we can make a name for ourselves doing that, but then the times change. Mm-hmm. So. The kettlebell, what's so great about it is that it's old school. It's old school, and it's for people that are willing to suffer for the pursuit of something, you know. And not everyone is hard like that. Some people are a little bit softer. They don't, you know, they don't want to go through a little discomfort, you know. Or I'm not saying pain, like no pain, no gain, but I'm saying, you know, no pain, no gain, basically. So. Yeah, so it's fun. It's been a fun ride, and still a fun ride as far as the kettlebell is concerned. And it's opened up the world to me. It's enabled me to see the world. So that's my love for kettlebell extends beyond its usefulness as a physical training implement. It's the possibility to have communities, you know, global communities. So that's, for me, the biggest gift that kettlebell has provided to me, aside from the physical education.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I'd like to touch base on with you, Steve, is, like, obviously you said you're one of the original, you're the OG of the original founding father group of the whole kettlebell movement, but how did you get into it? Like,
we'll say the modern kettlebell, because, you know, kettlebell's been around for a few hundred years. So if you go back to it, and again, there's various cultures, without going into a cultural lesson or historical, there's various cultures that have what you could call kettlebell-like implements, mm-hmm. Stones or weights of some sort with handles that might be used for throwing and catching and you know, swinging and these types of things. So specifically, we're talking about the Russian kettlebell. And, you know, that's been around a few hundred years, but nobody knew about it really. And so, you know, Pavel, in terms of the modern history, that's where it starts on the map, is with the Pavel, the Dragon Door, and the RKC. And then you have, you know, myself, Mike Mahler, Steve Maxwell, several other guys that were the early adapters in that time. Jeff Martone, you know, there's some other guys as well. Brett Jones, Rob Lawrence, you know. So that would be the first generation of the modern, but we can't pretend like kettlebells just started. Kettlebells been around. It's just nobody knew about it, you know. The Russians that went through the military, they're like, oh yeah, when I was a young kid, we used those, and, you know, a select group of sportsmen, very small group, you know. So what brought it, Pavel, and that is what created the movement. And then where I came in is I took that and I brought it around the world in a hands-on basis, in a live basis, like seminar. You're coming to my course and I'm teaching you, you know. I'm not talking about through digital means, or yes, the video, like you said, you would see my videos. There were videos and things out there, of course, YouTube. But as far as the bulk of my work, it's always been on the hands-on, you know. So that's just a bit of the history, you know, and then where I come into it. So that's just a clarification. You know, kettlebells is not something new, but what we know as kettlebells is, you know, almost 20 years, just under 20 years since the first kettlebells were being manufactured in the United States.
Has the acceleration of the interest within the sort of functional fitness kettlebell world, is that what you were expecting when you first started this? Did you foresee this, or is it really blown up?
I've always pursued just my interests. I pursue my love, my passion, you know, what I want to do. I think about what I want to do versus some other model that someone provides to me, or, so it's you could call it a liberal minded in terms of possibilities, that each person can decide for themselves. So, as you get older, you have hindsight. And you understand that, okay, this is what was happening. But as we're going through that, we're not necessarily, to answer your question in detail, it's yes and no. Because part of it is, yeah, I want to do this. And so you plant seeds. You could call that goal setting or dreaming or a mission statement of some, a lot of different ways to define it. Depends on how in-depth it gets. But you have that component, but in terms of the finer points of it, no, I never set out of it really as a business. I saw that there was an opportunity and I needed to make some money. So the thought never occurred to me to do something that I wouldn't want to do to make money. That never, so it was like, okay, this is where I'm at. And the kettlebell, I see Paul Bell, what he's doing, I could do that. Something called to me, but it wasn't early on, like thinking of the details of the business. It was just a calling. You see that, okay, that's something I want to be associated with. That's something I need to get involved with. So, started my kettlebell journey. I met Pavel in 2003. Immediately we connected, right after that I started, helping him run the courses as well, teaching the courses, kind of the first generation of the hierarchy, in that organization. And then, years later, I took it, went in a different direction, created IKFF in 2008, so yes, there's the business, but in terms of thinking the direction of functional, no, I liked it. I liked the kettlebell. That was the only reason that I needed. It wasn't about what's popular or what I think's going to be, but I have a natural eye for that, talent. I'm a good early adapter because I've been involved in other things. The ubiquitous blue half ball that's all around the world that most people don't know the name necessarily, but everybody has seen one, the Bosu. My dear friend invented that. So when he was still making it by hand, cutting it in half, duct tape and gluing it, I was working with him in the early, so then a couple of years later it was kettlebells. I have always had that knack for these types of things. Like, I knew Bosu was going to be big, and it doesn't matter if someone uses it, doesn't use it, likes it, doesn't like it. It's just the undeniable. Same with kettlebells. Not everybody loves kettlebells. Some people dislike or hate kettlebells. Okay. But certain things have stood the test of time, and so that's, and there's other things, but those are two notable, you talk about functional fitness, you have to, like, how are we defining that? In broad terms, you'd have to say that CrossFit, honestly, is the single largest impact in terms of what people view as functional fitness today. CrossFit is the single, and I would say kettlebell is the second single largest as a single entity. CrossFit, to different degrees, utilizes kettlebells, but that's not very far different than, say, what I'm bringing. And other interpretations of how you're going to train with a kettlebell. So point being is that if you're talking about functional fitness, you kind of have to define it more, like, what does that mean to you? Because it's the term functional fitness, when it first started in the early OG, was like the Paul Check era. Paul Check, and he's still around, but, he was one of the early pioneers, in the kind of Juan Carlos Santana. So this is the older generation, before there was kettlebells, before there was internet and social media, So in the early days of functional fitness, it was, okay, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you know, and now his career is ending. He's kind of just getting into being an actor and get, you know, so what people knew about fitness, it was like Muscle Media 2000. It was still the Muscle Magazine. So, okay, Muscle Mag, oh, three sets of 15, right? So that's the information. And then it came to functional fitness, but kettlebells weren't around yet. Okay, but the idea was, okay, not bodybuilder. I tried doing it and I couldn't sustain it into my, say, late 30s, my 40s. Oh, my joints hurt, all these things. So nowhere to go. And then there was the running phase in like the, you know, late 60s and throughout the 70s, the research about running, books about running, you know. But then that was like, yeah, but we're, you know, you're losing all your muscle because you're running all the time. So then it's, you know, so what do? The bodybuilding stuff isn't going to work. It's not going to last you a lifetime. Okay, so functional fitness emerged out of that. It's daily activities, be able to lift your kids and be able to, you know, move in the office chair without, you know, injuring yourself and all these things. And then we had these early tools, medicine balls and, you know, bands and, you know, so it was sometime later, a decade later, even a little, about a decade, that would be 90s. That would be, so about a decade later is when kettlebells came along. And then, you know, in that same era, the first CrossFit gym. And then, you know, CrossFit later emerged to be a much larger brand and, you know, it went in that direction. But that, you know, so today we say functional fitness, well, you kind of have to, you have to see what's the background of the person. Like, is it the general person saying that, or is it, you know, inside the functional fitness, you now have a school that likes to call themselves the unconventional training. So as a way to differentiate the unconventional, that's kind of a trending term. And that's, you know, the kettlebell being the centerpiece, because you take out the kettlebell, all those other things go away. But because of the kettlebell, now you have the mace and you have the Bulgarian bag and you have the ropes. The ropes stand alone. Ropes are also very significant. You know, the battling ropes, the John Brookfield. You know, you have the clubs, the Indian clubs, as well as the heavy clubs. So, you know, that's the unconventional. Then with the body weight, right? Body weight exercise. So, you know, then you have your calisthenic school, all pull-up bars and all parallettes. And, you know, so that's all functional, right? So it really comes down, for me, it's martial art. Martial art is the functional, you know, but if you're not the martial artist, then you're not going to have the same viewpoint. And for me, that's, I came full circle. So, you know, I went away from the martial art. I came through the kettlebell, and not realizing at the time, what I did is I created my own martial art, but I did it through the kettlebell. And at the time, while I was creating and just transitioning into, you know, from the RKC community, transitioning, and then realizing, okay, there's a market for me. There's people around the world that want me to do these seminars and inviting me to these places. And, you know, then a year after that, it's like kettlebell, or, you know, certifications. So I started going around the world, and I was the first person to do that, you know, in many, many countries, and still to this day, you know, like, that's just the truth. It's not bragging. It's just given the history of the reality of it. And, you know, there's other teachers for sure. There's other teachers for sure. But in terms of going to places that no one's ever been, either the kettlebells barely exist or there's some one guy, you know, and it's fun. I enjoy doing that. That's something that, you know, and I still have some of it. I still enjoy doing it, which is why I still do it. But it's, you know, my long-term goal is not to continue to do that forever. You know, it's mm-hmm. just, it's fun now. And I've been, you know, blessed with good health. So I'm able to sustain it to a certain level, you know, but like anything, eventually it will run its course, and all things do. And there's always pros and cons to every direction that we go in life. And so what we gain in one area, we have to give up in another area. And, you know, so we talk about fitness. Yeah, it's functional fitness. However, the part about the whole fitness landscape, if we talk about from a business model of people paying for information, and information about what we call fitness. It's really incomplete as long as you're focused on the body, because the reality about the body is that the body gets older and the body is fallible in the sense that it can break and it can get injured, and you know, it can store pain, and it's actually going to, what we call death. You know, we're going to die. The body is going to die. So that's the reality of it. So it's like, if your mind is just based upon the, you know, is it bigger, faster, stronger? Is it like more reps or heavier weight? Or, and then it's the exercise selection, you know? So sooner or later, the person, if they're going to do movement throughout their whole life, is they're constantly going to evolve their philosophy and the approach about what they prioritize as far as the, you know, movement and, you know, lifting weights or not lifting weights, or, you know, so, cause the thing that you do is always going to give you better results than the thing that you don't do. So, you could use something that is not quote unquote optimized, and you still will show more results than someone that is researching what's optimal. You know, so that's, you know, and so simplify. I think as we get older, at least for myself, I imagine most people, they want it, you want to simplify processes, you know, to have a simple life. And same is true for movement, same is true for fitness. But again, how do you define fitness? Is it a Darwinian type of fitness, or is it something based on an aesthetic, or is it something based on a function? And then how do you measure that function? Is it a sport, or is it just your, or do you have to create a sport? That happens. You can create new sports, you know. But you know, I just think there can be more of that. That's something that, the mental preparation of being able to age and to age gracefully and to be able to sustain, you know, vitality, sustain the energy of youth. You have to be able to have a youthful energy, but embrace the reality that the physicality is aging, and not to be constrained by available information. Because available information, although it may be vast, it still is lacking information that we're not yet aware of other information. In the future, we'll have information when we look back on now, it'll be like we didn't have the information like we have now. So we can't also be arrogant about what we know or what we think we know. So that's what I believe. It's an individual process. You know, but there's things that everyone can do, you know, so the emotional aspect is the more powerful, the emotion and the, what you could call the focus of the mind, and how those work together, you know, because your projection of the mind and then the emotion and this is the feelings. And those are the real powerful energies that we can tap into. So if we're not really aware of that or addressing that, all the physical stuff that you can be doing, even down to the drinking of the wheatgrass juice and you know, the meticulous, someone can be meticulously healthy in their physical habits and still be diseased on some other level, like in an emotional level, for example, you know. And, you know, so what I'm saying is that the quote unquote fitness, if you want to call it that, of the future is the integration of all of it. And my personal observation is that what's old is new, and we go back to from whence we came, and how that's all going to play out, you know, that's the mystery. There's prognosticators, there's people that, you know, earn their living predicting the future. But from where I sit, I see that there could be multiple different possible outcomes in terms of civilization, in terms of, you know, we're sitting here on these computers talking to each other. So I do see that things will be vastly different than what we experience now. And certainly the level of education about health and movement and you know, the integration of medicine and food and all these things together. We're still kind of in the dark ages right now in a lot of ways, because we have it's an emotional, it's a mental, we have the sophistication of technology to be able to eradicate many of the existing, you know, plagues of humanity. And yet something is holding that back, or at least it gives the appearance that it's being held back, because the changes are at a rate that the eye can't see. And so we easily can lose patience about the rate of change. And it's easy that things could appear like things stay the same, since we're not observant of the invisible changes. But nevertheless, life keeps moving. Life keeps moving. So there's the idea of imposing our will upon the world, imposing our will upon situations. And yeah, there's a lot of validity to that. We are able to do that in different scenarios. Yet there seems to be some other, what you might call a greater power that exists, that has a larger will, that has a more vast will, that is able to impose. Again, how do I label it? He, she, you know. So it's kind of both at the same time, you know. And it's like, if we were to observe ourselves from very far away, like a satellite looking, it would be no different than observing an ant colony, basically. And that's exactly what is shown, is you have these areas where it's basic stillness, and then at a predictable time every day, you have an influx, and now everyone's going, and then, you know, a little bit of patch of stillness, and then a predictable time later in the day, you have everyone, you know, and that's pretty much how we function as humans too. So I don't really know where it's all going, but I think everybody wants freedom. I think everybody wants liberty to be able to do what you want to do. And I think, you know, here the thing that we have to learn, all of us, is to be more kind, is to be, you know, more kind to each other. You could say more loving, to be not fearful, you know, and to learn how to get along ultimately. So I think until we're able to have the full consensus on that and participation, we have these difficult challenges to solve, you know. So my mind is, I'm not really just about the kettlebell. The kettlebell is something that, again, however God or whatever idea someone wants to use in their mind of this force, we could say that this all works through us. This all works through all of us as well. And so what I understand now that I didn't understand, you know, 17 years ago when I first held the kettlebell, maybe 18 years ago almost, you know, it's not about the kettlebell, but it is about the kettlebell at the same time. And, you know, that set me upon a path such that it enabled me to have these experiences that enabled me to share this wisdom now with the world. And, you know, so as much as I love the kettlebell and as much as I've done in terms of my professional career in the physical arts, from the martial art to the kettlebell and the fitness and, you know, movement, and however someone wants to try to define that, to the best of, you know, again, the internet doesn't tell the whole story. So it's like, in the early days of, you know, USA, for example, and, you know, it's, the pen is mightier than the sword, and the people that were the politicians, it was the ones that, you know, and it's still that way, but you start writing and you tell the tale. You tell the tale, and, you know, now it's the internet is sort of the platform that is being used, you know, to write the copy and to paint the story. And, you know, like, it may or may not be complete rubbish. It may or may not be true. And for me, I'm interested in truth. That's really what I'm interested in. So, you know, at the same time, I don't have any desire or even see the need or have any interest in enforcing or, you know, enforcing my views upon others. That's not really, you know, certain views maybe more strongly than others, but it's not, I don't think I'm here to tell others what they should or should not do personally. Mm-hmm. What I am here to do is to share my experience. So, you know, what do I know about? Well, you know, a lot of things, but, you know, I'm a martial artist. So it's, if you want to be 49 and still be powerful and be able to, you know, fight every day and, you know, however you express your warrior aspect, because that's what it is. We are a mixture. We are hybrids, basically, all of us. And, you know, in terms of the human species, we are all related, you can say. Direct, indirect, you know, various levels of bloodline, but, you know, it's within a narrow scope, the human. So it's within a narrow scope, which means that if you keep going backwards, you find that we basically are all connected, and then we branched out and populated the, right? That's our history. So here we are. You know, so basically, I'm trying to cover a lot of ground, but for me, the fitness is we have to take care of the body. So we have to take care of the body, and the way that we move now, it ties into the way that the early man, our early ancestors. So, you know, except we live in a so vastly different environment, and yet the genetic materials haven't altered really very much, other than certain growths here and there, but, you know, the pancreas maybe is not as active or whatever, but we're basically the same genetically in all the key ways, you know. So, but we live in these two-dimensional kind of, and you know, so most people are disconnected from their physicality, I guess is what I'm saying. I guess most people, you know, I can't really know for sure, because I only interact with a select group of people, and most of the people that I'm interacting are more on the physical, healthy, more vital. But I'm also aware that there's a population that are not. And, you know, just from being out in public, you know that, right? So I guess whether it's most people or not, it probably is also geographical. You know, Southern California, there's certainly less obese people than there would be, say, in the Midwestern United States. You know, so for example, you know, there's places where more than 70% of the population classified as obese. So it's not just about obesity. That's just the obvious, you know, target sign that the fitness people can prey upon, I guess, you know, or, you know, or try to help if you have that. Hopefully you have that viewpoint that you want to help. But I think there's also an element where people are being preyed upon, because there's information, and it's like, all these supplements, are they really going to make you healthier? all these supplement lines, like, is that really the direction that, you know? And yeah, there's a lot of marketing behind it. So we're still very naive in the, you know, a lot of marketing, like, okay, but it used to be called propaganda. And I'm not trying to sit here and say that marketing's not important. But what I am saying is that in the future, it's going to be less important, because what's more important is the truth. And if you have to basically stray too far from what is truthful, then in order to sell something, then, you know, I think it's gotten to a point of decay. And I believe that, you know, language is the key to creation. It's one of our keys, is how we use language, both written and spoken. And, you know, also on a psychological, emotional level, the language we have with ourselves, first and foremost, the language that we use with ourselves. And, you know, images and participation is, you know, the mindset. A lot of people that I talk to, they talk about like fitness industry. Well, I never have seen it as an industry, because like an industry to me, it ties into the industrial. And the industrial is a revolution in human history. Like, we went from the agrarian, the agricultural revolution, and then later we had the industrial revolution, right? That started in England and came to, you know, US. And so we are still, our infrastructure is still largely based on the industrial revolution in terms of our cities and, in some places more than others. You know, for example, in Dubai, the architecture and places like Shanghai, where there's all this new money coming in, you know, you go to those places and you see what a first world city looks like, right? So, I mean, even the architecture, but from a kind of consciousness net level, you know, we're trapped between two, I mean, human society as a whole and how we're functioning, we are trapped in sort of between these two worlds, where one is a present yet futuristic model, which we call the information age. And so we recognize that, and we even refer to it as the information age. And we can point to the example of, say, the internet as the main example, and the smartphone technology. And of course, now we have the artificial intelligence and the robotics and all the integration of that computation. Okay, so, and more powerful every 6 months, right? In this, and so, but if at the same time, if you look at the, at where most people are earning their money, and most of the systems like the schools and the hospitals and all these things, they're very much operating on a industrial model, which is like a bygone era that we don't even refer to it as the industrial age. Now it's the information age, and yet we're descendants of the industrial age. And yet, you know, so what I'm saying is that this has not really caught up to the technology. Mm-hmm. And that is the potential. Well, it's not potential, it's the limitation right now. And so to get to the level, there has to be an elevation of consciousness. And it goes beyond the bicep or what all that. But I use my physicality, and I still do. But now I'm 49 years old. You know, I'm not now, you know, through the martial arts, that's how I compete. That's how I sharpen my skills. And you know, I train with warriors every day, so I don't have to have that relationship with the outer world, you know, and that's what I've realized. And that's, you know, the martial artist is, it's, everyone has to find their balance. But as I was saying before, we are a mixture of these two things. We are part beast. Okay. We are part beast, the man, the human and the being. We're part beast. And so there's that element. And then there's another part of us, which, again, people try to define it and want an ownership to it, but that's not, I don't try to define it, because it's that which cannot be defined. You cannot define the sixth with the five, right? You can't, you know, like, if I can't see it or smell it or taste it or touch it or hear it, then it doesn't exist, right? That we're no longer in that level of consciousness. Now we understand that there's things that exist that we cannot actually experience through the sensory. Maybe some of us will pursue that, maybe through certain ingesting certain drugs, we can tap, touch it, and, or whatever, you know. But generally speaking, you know, there's many things that are outside of our field of awareness and that we're not experiencing through the body. But that's, we're more than this. And until more people have the awareness of that, then it's because it's like, what is the model? What is the pinnacle? I mean, for me, it's the athlete, you know, the great athlete, the LeBron James, the Michael Jordan, the, you name the great athlete, you know, is that the pinnacle of humanity? Is it, you know, what is it to be the king, the king or the president, or, you know, so what's the pinnacle? And for me, it cannot be about the body, because if it's about the body, then you will achieve your physiological peak, in which case you will only ascend. And, you know, I don't think we're here so that life is supposed to get worse. I think we're here so that life is supposed to get better, you know. And so coming to terms, and I guess, you know, some talk about acceptance, you could call it acceptance, to accept the reality of how life actually is. So is that, yeah, you can be the stud, you can be strong and all these things, but there will be a point where you're not going to go heavier anymore, and you're not going to go faster, and you're not going to jump higher, and you're not going to. And for me, it's kind of sad when I see older, you know, older individuals, older men, at least from my point of view, of not just older men, just in general, as, you know, you get into your senior years, and it's like, it's good to be healthy, but I see this unhealthy attraction to the physical. And, you know, even the social media, it doesn't, that just kind of reinforces that, because you see these Instagram massive followings where it's just, you know, it's like, look at me, and I got to take some article of clothing off in every post, otherwise there's no recognition, you know. And the mind is so much more powerful than the body. So, and whoever achieves greatness, they achieve it through the focus of the mind. And so the body is only as useful as its capacity to move us through space, so you can go from place to place. And other than that, you know, I don't know how to put it into a fitness thing, but prepare the consciousness for life without the body. Because if you know, there's this idea about holding on so tight, and even in the media, you have, I don't know if it's a select population or if it's something that, you know, everyone's interested in, but, you know, certainly there's Silicon Valley executives and tech moguls that are, you know, they want to live forever, right? They're interested in the biomedical advancements, to the point where, yeah, you know, this nanobot's going to shut off this gene, or, you know, I'm going to take this pill that's going to circumvent, you know. And then it's like robotics, like, you know, this arm is a little dinged up, so I can get a better arm, better, stronger arm that isn't going to wear out, you know. So it's like, there are individuals that have that idea, like they want to be immortal, they want to live forever, and they're using their money to facilitate the research and development of any type of possible contraption that can, you know, contribute to that. So I think it's funny, but it's like, to me, that makes no sense. Like, it makes no sense. So, and I just think in fitness, there's still too much focus on the body and not enough on the internal state, on the invisible state, you know. And if this is strong, you can do whatever with the body, because before you do it, you have to decide to do it. You know, there's people that they want to do it and they can't because the body doesn't allow them to. So if anything, it's about sustaining the health, you know, sustaining the health so that we can use the body and be able to. But how we do that, it's very individual. For me, I think the martial art is the ultimate. And Because it's the closest, and it's, you know, it's everything else is an extension of that. So if I'm holding a kettlebell in my hand, or any implement or any bar or what have you, a bag of some sort, those are all extensions, you know. And so my stance and my awareness of my stance and my posture, my breathing, and my mindset, what I'm focused in, that is the foundation to every movement system, you know, or exercise system. So, and then it's what you spend your time doing. So if you do spend time doing a lot of pull-ups on a regular basis, you're going to get good at pull-ups, for example. So, you know, I mean, but the ultimate technique is breathing. You know, I mean, the Wim Hof is the, you know, breathing guru that took something that's been around for the beginning of time and has made it like this phenomenon, right? More so than any other single person. I mean, there's been teachers and gurus around the world teaching about breathing for thousands, and, you know, how old is human history? So whenever the point that humans started to become detached from their breathing, they probably began breathing training of some sort. And, you know, so, but Wim, of all that time, Wim Hof is the first guy to actually make a career. And, you know, so there's something to it, right? You know, but that's just an example, a popular example of the importance, and breathing is the first and last technique, because any exercise that you're going to do with a kettlebell or not with a kettlebell, it's your breath. How are you breathing? And the use of that. And then the recovery, when you're recovering, it's, you know, so the breathing is the foundation. And then from there, it's, you know, you have some approach. And for me, the martial art is the, that's the bringing together. And the bringing together is the holistic, because we are a holistic hybrid, as I was saying earlier, mixture. And, you know, we are part beast and part, how you want to call it, a spirit of some sort, if you want to use that idea or not, you know, but some invisible force. And, you know, that's why we're called human beings. You know, so being, what's a being? Well, it's, how do you define a being? It's a state. So, you know, and I just think that the longer the fitness communities ignore that and try to pretend like, yeah, I'm, you know, now I'm 50 something and I'm still teaching Soul Cycle that I've been doing for 30 years. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but people don't have to sell themselves into slavery to make a living. Like, you can just put out good information, you know. And, you know, I guess it's easy to lose track if you've been involved. Like for me, I never got into fitness. I never got into, hey, I want to, got into martial arts when I was 12 years old. And that was my introduction to physical training, physical culture. And from there, you know, later I found the kettlebell. And so I was able to integrate my understanding of stance and moving, and integrate that with what I was learning with the kettlebell, then grow in the kettlebell, you know. And then, you know, a little over a year ago, I came back to the martial art with the jiu-jitsu, you know. And so that's like a full circle. But I was always doing the martial art. It's just I saw the commonalities in the tool, and, you know, the body alignment. You know, now I'm validating that on another level, because I realize, okay, the strength of the fingers and the understanding about the framing, it complements. But each person has to decide for themselves what they're going to be great at, what they want to spend time. If you do it over the course of your whole life, you can probably become great at multiple different disciplines. But, you know, that's what I think. The honesty is, you know, because fitness is still too much in the trends. And what I say is, you find a system. And again, I'm partial to martial arts, you know, but you find a great teacher. That's the more important, more than even than the art, is the lineage. But, not everyone wants to do that, and that's fine too. Maybe you want to do calisthenics, you want to do weightlifting, or whatever it is that you want to do. Find a good system that gives correct information, but if you want to be great at something, you have to do that thing. You can't try to do all these different things. And it seems like in fitness now, there's this popular thing of I want to be good at a lot of different things. And that's cool. You're good at a lot of different things, but I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in being great at one thing. So, because if you're not great at the one thing, all those other things, I guess it's just I guess it's just a viewpoint. It depends because, others may say that specialization is for insects and, so it really depends on how you look. If you see yourself more of like a James Bond kind of character, then yeah, you need to be, you have a lot of different skill sets that you can pull out, I guess. But not me. I'm more simple than that. I just want to be good at the thing that I'm interested in. So for a lot of years, the kettlebell was kind of the center part of the focus. And it was not just the kettlebell as the art of the kettlebell, but the teaching, the art of teaching. And, I developed my own methodology in the art of teaching through the kettlebell and teaching principles of the martial art through the kettlebell. And will I still be using kettlebells in 10 years? Probably to some degree, but I think I will use it, for mobility, but probably not extensively. In other words, it's not my thing that I do every day. That's jujitsu, that's martial art. That's something I'll do every day the rest of my life. So anything outside of that on the physical training is only a supplement, and it is if it's going to be a complement, and the dosage, not to ever to detract from the main thing. So, it's not about trying to compare, I just think that the message is study the craft, and develop an excellence in this specific craft. And it's not really important which the craft is. I would wish for everyone that they select a craft that they truly are passionate about. When you say someone's passionate, it means that you would not think not to do it every day. That's what passion is. Passion is you do it every day and you don't even comprehend the idea of, like I'm gonna, 2 days a week, or I'm gonna commit 3 days a week. There's nothing wrong. I'm not saying that you have to be all in, but the warrior, the warrior, the samurai. That's you live it, you be it. So what I've tried to do even with the kettlebell is I've never been a teacher or instructor that I don't want people to be dependent upon me and to have to come back to me for the rest of their life on in that. It's that I want to put the most essential things in them and so that they can go and they have the essential ingredients that they can become great. Just add passion, just add time, just add repetition, just add, all the things that you need to do. But you have the right, you have the right process to follow to get to the point where now you can make your own decisions. And that's what I've done and what I always am interested in doing, so that, and then when the people see me, it's, hey, I learned from you 10 years ago, or I learned from you off of this DVD, or, I took a class with you, or whatever it is. And it changes their life is what happens. And, so, but I don't label myself a transformational coach. That's what it is, however, because it's not for me. Like these labels aren't really to put on ourselves is for other people to decide if you are, you know, have an impact on them or not. So
yeah, with everything you said, Steve, I mean, just going back right to the beginning, it was it's a lot of esoteric concepts that you brushed over, and a few that stuck in my mind is like at the beginning where you said that you needed a little bit of money and there was a call to action or call to adventure which you answered, and through doing that you then kind of went through that self-initiation of meeting Pavel, and then you did that was like your mentor, which took you from your ordinary world into your extraordinary world. And then what happened then is you went through...
One correction. I don't refer to Pavel as my mentor.
As just someone you just learned together?
He was a professional colleague. He was the key master to a tool that caught my eye. And so I brought my level, my high level of martial art knowledge, and I essentially added that to his program. So I would say that he certainly was a contributor in my early stages of a business model that I would look at and replicate on, you know, to some degree, which was essentially teaching kettlebells. So in that regard, but I don't say mentor because I have a different standard for mentor. I have very few mentors, and you know, so I just wanted to clarify that that was your description but not my own.
Yeah, one of the points you made as well that earlier on that I picked up on is that you said although you're the kettlebell guy, it's more than the kettlebell. And one of the things that brings to mind when you say that, it's like the way that I look at it, it's like the kettlebell is the key to the door, which is your body, and it allows you to open up something that goes a lot deeper than the physical realm. And there's many tools that people can use in order to access this realm, and the kettlebell, if used with the right intention, is one of those tools. And like you said, you followed your bliss, and that took you on your hero's journey. And through that hero's journey, you faced your trials and tribulations, and you come out the other side to where you are today. And I think when you go through that process, you gain a deeper intuitive understanding and wisdom of the whole process of life. And I feel like that's where you started to feel and know that there's more to the game than just the body. And you said, like, as obvious, there's a lot of people within the health and fitness industry that are obsessed.
That's a good observation, and you're right. And the way that it helped is that it gave me a global awareness. It allowed me to see the world. And in seeing the world, it presented me the opportunity to interact with all different ethnicities and people that spoke different language and ate different foods and had different daily customs and local customs and languages, and yet to be able to see the sameness within it all, and to recognize that there are no differences, and the most fundamental levels we are the same. And so it gave me this recognition of global centric and you know, even cosmic centricism, in the sense that we are all connected and we are a part of something more. And it's not a hierarchy in the sense as one is more important than another. And, you know, all that about the ego of consuming the ego, consuming the entire self, it burns out. You know, it cannot be sustained. The ego has to be the fire cannot be too hot, because then it boils over, and you know, you need to just simmer it, and so it bubbles, and you know, it just goes. And that's the lesson. You know, so we cannot take too seriously even accomplishments and resume and titles and popularity and, you know, all that. Yes, of course, respect, and if you've earned a lot of respect and you've, you know, but the respect should just be based on meritocracy. It's all about meritocracy is what, you know, so I don't really function in the fitness world because fitness, there's a lot of, you don't have to necessarily be an expert to be prominent in the fitness world. You just have to have certain marketable capacity, and that, you know, and that's not the only example. We see that throughout segments of society and professional, where you have, whatever you want to call it, politics and basically a lot of fake stuff. And, you know, and it's prominent because there's a lot of money behind the promotion of it and the advertising of it. And then we're so susceptible to that as a species, you know, it's been proven over and over, you know, so good information. But anyway, the seeing of the world, that was a significant, and it continues. It's not like it happened. It evolves. You know, I continue. It's still a big part of my life. It's more select. You know, now I target certain areas more than others. But, you know, it was significant in the sense of changing my understanding of the world and the psychology. So your observation about that is really correct. And so that's why I said the kettlebell was the tool. And so as great as the kettlebell is, and, you know, I'm sure there's, I'm not going to say whatever the number is, but there's a number of people around the world that will say, you know, the kettlebell changed my life, or that will say that I, you know, that by seeing my video or attending my course, you know, and that's really great. And that's nice to know, but it's not about me or you, it's not about the person and the name it's not about the name. It's about the work. It's about the work. So, you know, the kettlebell is fundamentally useful. It serves a utility, but that's it. It's a tool, and it's not for everybody, you know. So what's for everybody? Breathing is for everybody, and movement is for everybody, you know. So that's the fundamental, the breathing, the movement, and now you branch out from there. Now you're going to put something in your hand, and now you're extending, you know. That's why I say martial art is the ultimate, because if you can express your art and your combat, and you can do it in a way that you're not, you know, you can sustain it. Well, how much more functional do you think to be than that? You know, like there's basically a stick, there's stone. So there's throwing, there's swinging, there's running, there's running and jumping, and there's climbing, right? So those are the things. So we climb, we can run, we can throw, we can swing and implement, right? So and the, you know, then there's the wrestling, the grappling, this stuff, or the punching and kicking. So if you want to talk about functional, that's what functional is. And, you know, the more you remove from that, the less functional it gets, because now I have to pick something up and I have to move that. And it's not to say that that skill is not useful and that function could potentially benefit these other functions, but it's not the main thing. The technique is the main thing. The skill is the main thing. So of whatever you're doing, it's the practice and the execution of the skill. And it doesn't really begin to be truly beneficial until you've perfected the technique, because then when you perfected that technique, now it becomes a part of who you are. So there's, you know, and so it has to be autonomic. You can't think, you have to feel. And so for me, the martial art affords that, you know, in a way that appeals to me. In other things don't, you know. And so I'm always, even with the kettlebell, I still like the kettlebell, but I don't use it as much as I used to. I teach it, you know, and I use it just the right amount that I need for me to supplement the, you know, the martial art. But I still have the viewpoint of how I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it as a martial. I'm not seeing it as a workout per se. It's the feeling of the movement, so and the intention of what you're trying to do. So, but you know, I don't really care about the bodybuilding. That's not when you are a fine-tuned machine, you just, your body's going to fluctuate between a range where you'd be more or less conditioned, but you don't deviate from the mean ever very far, you know? So that's, it's for the rest of life. It's not for some photo. you know, and then there's other significant things. You know, the person that I am, I believe so much in my purpose that on the most fundamental levels, I sacrifice, you know, and it's not a negative, it's a positive, but it depends on one's viewpoint. 4 years ago, I became a vegan, a strict vegan, and that was a big change for me. I was 45 at the time, and I hadn't thought when I was younger that that would be a one day, and I hadn't really ever given it any consideration or even being vegetarian, but it did, life led me in that direction. And, you know, so 4 years, and, you know, so my physicality is, you know, the Steve Cotter when I started is different. It's not that I'm less, I'm more actually, because the Steve Cotter now, the Steve Cotter younger could not handle the Steve Cotter. The flow pressure finish would, you know, would be too much for the younger, stronger, buffer Steve Cotter. So, you know, but subsequently to that, I also became less and less interested, because it was like, I'm not about mass. I was never about mass, but I was naturally, you know, I had a good amount of mass for my frame, and, you know, especially for a guy that wasn't a bodybuilder, and you know, and so that put me on the map, you know, being a strong guy and being, you know, being a muscular guy. And then I became vegan. My body got a lot smaller, and I didn't really think about it, but a lot of people started saying, you know, oh, you're getting skinny, and, you know, so I didn't, even my wife. So I was like, okay, now I have to pay more attention to how I'm eating and get the right nutrition, not just be vegan for my, you know, yes, be vegan for the, whatever you want to call it, ethic, the moral of it, yeah, the purpose of it, the meaning of it. But, you know, so having made that decision, and now the eating is very different, and going around the world, I'm not eating just everything anymore. So it's like eating very little, because maybe there's not so many options, you know, depending on where I'm going. You know, so I have a different association with food now. It's just fuel for me, and I don't have the emotional, you know, I used to have a lot of emotional connections to food, which I didn't realize at the time, but now in retrospect, you know, it's easy to see. And, you know, so I don't have that anymore, because I don't eat any foods that are addictive in that way. Like, I don't eat any animal, like flesh, or, you know, so those are the foods that are addictive. When we have cravings, it's like for meat or for like cream, for, you know, ice cream or butter or some, those are the kind of cravings that people get, you know. You know, sometimes it can be for the sugar as well, definitely, you know, so or bubbles or things like that. But you eliminate those foods, after a while you don't have those cravings. So, you know, for me, there's no craving to eat anything. So it's really just eat for fuel. And I don't like to eat too much. I like to be light. I like to be light, and I like to be lean, and the strength to weight ratio is what I care about, and the power to weight ratio. And more important than that is just the function of it, you know? So, everyone's different in that way, you know? So I'm the right size for me, but in terms of my, I'm not trying to, impress anybody anymore. Like when I was a younger guy starting out, you know, I'm not, I impress people by who I am, not by necessarily my how I look with my shirt on or off. you know, and it's just the maturity, because it's like, as you're in fitness, you make your living, or even as an athlete, you know, and then you get to an older and your body can't do it to the same degree or the same level anymore, you know, and I don't believe in that. Like, I'll always do what I do. Like, so when you define your own expectations and your own standards for happiness, and, you know, then it's finding a strategy and a philosophy that enables you to sustain that. And, you know, so I'm really happy about the direction that things go for me, because I wouldn't have ever gotten into the kettlebell or the fitness if I didn't enjoy it. That was the reason that I got into it. It was because it was something that I was personally fascinated by, but I was personally interested and was personally doing. And so then it was like, oh, and I can also make money doing this too, what I'd be doing anyway, even if there was no money. So I went on that path, and I stayed on that path, and I never have deviated from that path. And, you know, and I think that's important. At least for me, it's important, because it allows me the possibility to be happy, and it allows me the possibility to do what I want to do versus have to sort of put myself in an environment where you don't have that feel. You know, you need to have that feel. And probably in the future, well, you know, I think there's still a lot of people that are working jobs and things that, you know, and they don't enjoy it, you know, and I think moving forward, more and more people, and the internet is a great tool. And, you know, I guess as people study that and learn how to leverage it, more and more people can kind of break free of that and use the internet as a money-making tool as well. You know, so, but, you know, it's just, there was no, early on you asked about the functional fitness sort of on the business thing. And I never took the time to think of it that way. I just knew, for myself. And, you know, so I'm at the edge. I've always been at the edge. And, you know, like I said before, because what's new is what's old. And it's all coming back. And, you know, the handheld tools that will, you know, those will stay around, you know, but at some point, if you want to take all that stuff to its final conclusion, it always goes back to the martial art again, because it came out of the martial art. So it's, you're a tribesman and this is your tribe, and you got to eat and you got to protect your tribe. So all the physical stuff just increases your capacity to do that better. And, you know, if you can throw and do all these things, you have a better chance of survival. And, you know, so we moved away from that with the kingdoms and the cities, you know, and keep the beast outside of the garden. But we also gave up our connection to that in the process. And so now there's this hunger for the primal, you know, there's a hunger for the primal. And, you know, marketing takes advantage of that, because just because you call something primal doesn't make it primal. Like, how are you defining it? Because if it's primal, then it's fight, flight. That's primal. so if it's not, if there's not a connection to the fight, and, you know, so the basis of the physical training is locomotion. That's the basics of it. If you're standing in one place and you're the strongest guy possible there, okay, well and good. But in terms of the survival of the species, you being strong standing in one place isn't going to serve you for very long. Like, eventually you're going to have to move from that place to another place. And now that same advantage is your major disadvantage. Correct me if I'm speaking out of turn, but I think that's how it works. You know, so then the movement And so now how are we defining it? Is it my capacity to crawl along the ground like a lizard? Yes and no. It depends if I need to crawl along the ground like a lizard. But, you know, so that's, you know, I think ultimately it just comes back to the martial art, you know, and then the tools now becomes, okay, so I have this weakness that I need to strengthen, and I can't do it with my existing toolbox. So I got to come into these other areas and connect it so that I can use that to improve this, thereby strengthening the overall, you know. So actually, I think that as far as the whole fitness and functional fitness, as far as it's grown and developed, it hasn't in some fundamental levels, in that the bulk of it is still focused on the aesthetics, you know, and it's or whatever, a certain look or a certain, you know, what I say is you got to love yourself. You got to love yourself. And, you know, the process of that, of learning how to love yourself and remembering what that feels like, you know, that's a very extensive process. And there's very few qualified individuals that can guide that process, because someone has to have done that themselves before they can, you know, really guide others into doing that. And so I see the potential as being so much more than what it is, because it's like trainers have a really significant position in society now, especially compared to 2 decades ago, even a decade ago. It, you know, the role of a we'll just say trainer. I mean, that can cover a lot of ground, personal trainer, but it will say trainer. The capacity to have impact has grown and continues to grow as time goes on, and will continue to grow over the foreseeable future. I think it seems apparent in that sense. You know, in as much as there was no career path personal trainer a few decades ago, really, you know, it was the personal trainer was the guy that was already lifting weights for his whole life, and then now what am I going to do? Well, he's the guy with the biceps in the gym, so the other people in the gym say, hey, will you be my trainer? That's how the personal trainer started. But it was never like, I'm going to go to school to get my certification to be a personal trainer. And, you know, but I think the potential is much greater, because if someone is successful, they can develop this, you know, very strong local network of professionals that rely upon them and, you know, over time confide upon them in many cases. And then the trainer grows into this role as almost like a therapist without being a therapist, but that's exactly what they do through the, you know, if you see someone 2 or 3 times a week, you know, on a regular basis, right? There's a relationship that grows out of that and those people. So the potential for trainers to have a really big impact on society as a whole, I think, is much greater than what many trainers have even thought about or comprehended, you know. And so the challenge for educators is to get put out good information, you know, put out good information. And I think good information is information that is simple to apply and, you know, is something that is sustainable, that will last that person beyond its, beyond a, say, a 6 week or an 8 week or a 12 week, something that they can use in their life, you know. So if you can't squat and I show you and your body remembers how to squat, then that's a tool that you can take. And it will, even if you never see me again, that will have benefited you in your life, right? So that's like a simple example, but that capacity is there. And, you know, so I don't have all the answers as far as, how to improve the, but I think, you know, the education of fitness professionals, I think it's very important. And I would like to see more understanding about things beyond sets and reps and even, you know, exercise selection, that's important. However, there's a lot of importance in terms of the ethics and responsibilities, as well as taking the focus away from just the how you appear in the mirror, and putting also more attention on, you know, how a person is coping in their life, and, you know, the level of happiness and the state of mind, which influences the rest of the reality, you know, that is being experienced. Because we start tapping into that information, and that information starts getting widespread, then we become more powerful as a species, actually, is what happens. So that's what I'm all about. It's, you know, yeah, optimization, but it's also evolution, because we have to actually, we either become consumed or we evolve into a superior being.
Yeah, I trust Steve, I totally agree with you. And just going back on, just to kind of round this all up on everything that you said and how I kind of process it and analyze it for myself, it's like when you said that you always had those sort of testimonials of people messaging you saying, oh, the kettlebell saved my life, changed my life. Well, the kettlebell didn't change your life, you changed your own life. The kettlebell was a tool in which helped you facilitate that change.
Correct.
And there is a sort of a belief within certain esoteric circles of how the soul incarnates on earth, that you start off as a base consciousness within the crystal kingdom, and then you work up to the plant kingdom, then the animal kingdom, and then you get to us. And there are levels above us, but we are interested in that scale, in that we have the capability to choose where our consciousness resides in that scale. We can reside with the animals.
Good words, and, brother. Good
yeah,
words.
Be animalistic in nature, or we can reside with the gods, depending on how we view the world, how we view ourselves, and what I see fitness as, which is why I was talking about the functional fitness earlier, is that fitness allows you a doorway to tap into the innate intelligence of your body, that when you tap into that, you then tap into the higher intelligence. And there's levels to it. On the when we're tapped into the body, we have personality archetypes that we have to control. We have to balance. And then what I really see this all being about, or integrative fitness that you said, is the ability to be able to balance the physical, mental, and spiritual all together. And when we begin to do that, that's when we start to see the evolution of ourselves. Like, anatomically, we're not going to change. We haven't changed for the past 400,000 years. What is going to change is our level of consciousness. And what's going to affect our level of consciousness is the quest in life of self-mastery. And that's what I believe, that why you kept referring back to the martial arts. The martial arts itself, although it is a self-defense art form, what the real martial artists are about self-mastery. You see the people in the UFC.
For me, it's self-defense against myself is what it is. It's self-defense of myself, because it is the beast that is destructive. And we have the possibility at any moment to deviate and choose. And, you know, this as a discussion point is referred to as the free will. And so the mastery is to be able to stay calm under the utmost stress, the utmost discomfort, mm-hmm. and the self-discipline in to be able to make the correct decision in the moment of need. That is the martial art. And you have to be able to slay the beast within yourself, because that great, kind, loving person is the same person that will kill and destroy, you know. And we have this, we've been sold for generations and, you know, millennial, you know, these stories And the reality is we are of the same stuff. And as you said, very correctly, you know, very succinctly, much more succinctly than I've been able to say it. So yeah, we are completely on the same page of the same story. And so the martial art is about that, because it's not about conquering someone, and it's not, I don't have to do anything to defend, because there's nothing that I need. So, you know, am I attached? Yes, I have attachments, you know, and that's part of the human experience. And I don't forego those attractions. That's why I'm not a monk. That's why I chose to be in the world, you know, and it's not, I've known for a long time that I'm here because I choose to be, not because I have to be. And it's really about dialing in the frequency so that the work becomes more precise, you know, because there is a race against time, if you want to say it that way. There is a battle between forces of light and forces of darkness, if you want to look at it from that point of view. And we all have the opportunity to choose. I choose, you know, and I, so, you know, the, my God is an awesome God. That's the way I'll say it. I mean, if you want to try to put it into words, but you know, you don't fear the beast, because the power is not in the darkness. The power is in the pure light of love. And, you know, it's not about even the mind, the body, the mind, there's this connection through the energy centers. And, you know, the heart is, in terms of our radiation, our vortex, you know, to call it that, the heart magnifies a far, you know, magnitudes, hundreds of, you know, deviations beyond the brain in terms of the electrical magnetic energy. Our heart is, this is where we will ultimately, this is our portal. You know, more the consciousness, but the consciousness is not just our thinking. The consciousness is also within the feeling, and the feeling, you know, and that's what we call love. That's what, that's the power of all this creation. So, you know, someone has to love themselves. If you, you know, and if you have to go through the physical to do that, that I guess, then that's what you have to do. You know, if you have to like love yourself in the mirror before you can love the real you, but also that can serve as a distraction and people.
Yeah, it's
can
all stay.
Yes, it is superficial, because this comes from the earth and this returns to the earth, and you know that's the.
And
human.
Your soul comes from the heavens and it returns to the heavens.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be like the steam rises, so. Yeah, so I mean, where it all meets back is, it just, you know, it just time and place. So it comes, and we need those that have made the connection. You have to make the connection here through the voice, and it's through the spoken words is the way to manipulate the matter, is through the sound. Yeah,
well, that's the ancients knew that sound was key. Sound is vibration, and vibration affects matter.
We are the
matter.
Ancients.
Yeah,
exactly. We are the ancients.
I really agree with what you're saying. Like time is cyclical, and the old is going to be the new. And I always say that our ancestors are us in the future. They are the blueprint of what we are to become. And we have to learn from them. We have to learn from their teachings, their secrets that they encoded within their texts, within their architecture, within their mythologies, and within that, that holds the key to our future, that holds the key of ascension, that holds the key of that unification with a higher source of consciousness. And yeah, I totally agree with you, Steve, about where the fitness industry is at, and it is so materialistic in nature. We like the one of the sort of analogies that I always use, it's like you would have heard it a million times, is when you hear people in the gym and they're like, oh, you skip leg day. You skip leg day, bro. It's like you only train upper body. Well, the whole thing is that from a scalar perspective, is that the fitness industry only cares about the material body. You're skipping the other half of the coin, which is the spiritual body. So although you've got people that are there saying, oh, you've skipped leg day, 99% of the fitness industry, they skip the complete other half of what being human's about. And you're only, just as you're going to get big and strong upper body wise with no legs, nothing to ground you physically, you're also at the same time, if all you care on is the physical, you're going to be so attached to the material that you have no connection to the spiritual. And once your body begins to degenerate, like you said, what's your foundation then? Where's your strength and spirit? Have you faced adversity? Have you faced trials for the spirit to overcome? Have you proven to yourself that your mind is capable of being able to take your body through stages and moments in life where your body wanted to quit? There's all these answers that you need to initiate the situation to ask yourself those questions in order to get to those answers for yourself. And most people don't do it. Most people don't live up. They don't answer that call to adventure that I mentioned earlier, that you got and you answered, and that took you on your quest. And you learned what you needed to learn, and you've come to your own truth. You embody your truth. You're not here sprouting out someone else's knowledge. Everything that you say is from your experience, which you've transmitted. You've transmuted that knowledge into wisdom. And that's why, that's what truth seekers do. And that's what I see myself as. Like, I'm here to follow truth in this life. And that's my passion. I've got my purpose just like you have. And my purpose is to bring this new paradigm of complete human optimization to the world. And I want to be able to connect with people like you that are the gatekeepers of this knowledge sect. So I can learn from you. And I can.
It's a living art, and the living art is passed directly. And yeah. This is the limitation of the digital, is because the information is moving more and more towards the tablets and smartphones, and you know, however that transcends into implants or whatever the case may be, you know, the download of the digital, and so then you lose the ancient arts. You know, like you cannot hack everything. And skill is something that you cannot hack. And, you know, especially in the physical training, is the physical education. And, you know, so where I see myself coming in and you know, now I'm in, it's about making the correct connections and facilitating the vision in which, you know, you have this transformative platforms now, and it's very much in the mental aspect, the psychosocial, and yet I see that the Silicon Valley crowd, if we look at the physical, it's so archaic, and the physical education has to catch up to the education in terms of the, we can say, mental and emotional, you know, because there's a lot going on now with understanding. There is a whole class of people that are elevating themselves in terms of whatever you want to call it, you know, digital nomads. You live wherever you want in the world, and you run your business through your laptop and your iPhone. And that's just, and there's a growing class of people that are doing that. They you know, they're breaking out of the old paradigm of you got to go to school and go to debt so you can get your degree and go to corporate, you know, like that model. It's not dead because it still exists, but it's a going out, and the new model is this, you know, through the digital. And yet we still have this holding us down, And so we have to care for the physical education, and that's, you know, so the simple in this real complex technological stratosphere of information going around, you know, it's the simple stuff. And, you know, what's the right path? Well, you need to find a great teacher. That's the right path, is within the individual, the lineage, and the ones that live and embody that. And, you know, more than I think, for me, more than the art, because it's like you live in a small town and there's a karate school or there's a dance school and, you know, there's a yoga school and, well, or music school. You know, if there's a great teacher, learn that. You know, the art, forget, because the wisdom goes through all the different arts. You know, at the end of it, you have to, it's a self-discipline. That's what it is. It's a self-discipline. So some people are going to gravitate more towards the physical, and others are going to gravitate, you know, more towards the thinking. But I think we have to have both. We have to, you know, because if you're the real smart executive guy and you don't have the physical, you're probably going to need it at some point, and you're probably going to need it and not have it. So, you know, and the hacking and all that stuff is not going to be useful to you. So, you know, like, we got to go back to, and if you're not climbing trees and throwing, whatever, swinging sticks and throwing, if you're not doing that, which in our societies, mainly you're an athlete, you know, you're a baseball player or something, you're an athlete, so you get to extend that physicality. But if you're not an athlete, you basically give it up. So now your option is you join a CrossFit gym or yoga or something. But martial art is really something that everyone should do. I believe if there's anything physical, more so even than kettlebell, or more so because, you know, one, you learn to overcome conflict, because we're social beings. So you know, we engage, and, you know, you learn that everything's going to be okay. You learn that, yeah, there's stress and yeah, there's pressure, you know, because my sensei says, you know, sensei Salo Ribeiro, it's sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail. And I keep that in mind, you know, very often, because it's true. You know, you can pressure, or you can get pressured, and the scenario will change. And if it's not in a person, it's represented through another person, it can be represented, but you extend it into life. And, you know, there are things that are going to be blindsight, you know, that you're unexpected, that you have to deal with, and it may not be comfortable, and people die, and we all die, you know, it is. So the permanency of this is an illusion. And it's the temp, you know, it's transitory, you know, and we are going back. We've agreed on this, you know, many times. We're going back to where we came. And so, but the attention's all on going out and like going other places. And I'm like, wait a second, you know, there's precedence before, you know, and I think we're another 1,000 years or so. It's changing again, you know, the poles, we're close to the end of the poles, where it's, you know, in fact, we might already be in it, and just, we don't realize it while it's happening. But
do you follow that activity?
The feminine, it's changing from the masculine to the feminine. And, you know, and last time it was from the feminine to the masculine. And, you know, so this was, and I can go on and, you know, for hours and hours about this and the history, you know, from the whitening of Jesus Christ and all these, you know, historical, the last 1,000 years in particular. But, you know, you extend it, you know, like.
Are you familiar with all the processional ages and the evolution of consciousness?
Probably not the language that you're speaking about.
It's very similar to what it's literally, it's kind of just the overarching sort of term for what you were saying in terms of like those pole shifts of how we go from the sort of dominancy of one energy to the other. And for the past X amount of years, we've been very
perspective astrologically, if you're looking at it that way.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It links into that, and it's like you said, we've gone from a very sort of masculine dominant energy, and now we're sort of Kind of. It's, we're moving into more of a feminine-based energy, which the feminine energy itself is going to be more of, well, it's chaotic creation. It's feeling. It's emotion. And we're, us as men, it's important for us to be able to implement and integrate the feminine aspect of ourselves into our life. If we're too focused on the masculine, which is just determination, focus, drive, but you've got none of the emotion, you've got none of the feeling, the creativity of that energy to be able to balance that, you become very, well, you become pretty much how the world is now.
And yeah, it's destructive. It loses control and boils over, and you know, the balance is not there, and so there's many things we can point to of, you know, and so the earth is a mother earth, you know, and it's a feminine, and it's the nurturing, and that's what the mother, we come from the mother, all of us. So you know, the womb and the woman, and you know, the recognition of that is that this is an evolution, because it's the exact conversation we're having, and it's about the physicality, because it's, you know, the man is the peak of the testosterone, and so now you're, if you don't have the balance, then when you start to, when that starts to deviate, your whole identity is diminished, and then you become insecure, and then you have to try to compensate for it through other behaviors, and it you know, and this is the difficulties that we have in society, is not the acceptance, you know, of the processes and of the changes and the cycles, you know, to the balance. And, you know, so we are moving into a greater understanding of this feminine and recognition of its power, you know, and there's many, you know, the Me Too revolution is sort of a social, you know, it's something that illustrates this working on a level of society, you know, just as far as in the Twitter age. You know, and that's showing the power of the women, in the sense, and the evening of the scales, and, you know, nothing is absolute, but there's definitely that trending, and, you know.
Yeah, I think we go through cycles. I think we go through cycles of time where we are, as a civilization, predominantly influenced by the divine masculine. And from there, we begin to fade, and we become sort of consumed by the shadow masculine. And the only thing that can bring light to the shadow masculine is the divine feminine. And then from there, from the divine feminine, we fall into the shadow feminine. And then the only thing to bring light to the shadow feminine is going to be the divine masculine. So what we need to do in order to break that cycle is be able to embody the divine masculine and the divine feminine, and it's the unification of that brings us into that androgynous nature of which our primordial self emanates from. And it's, you, like, there are ways of doing that. There's energy work, there is, like you said, this integrative perspective of health, of well-being, of fitness is just one aspect of it. And I think it takes a door, and fitness may not be everyone's door, but for you, I think it was your door, Steve, and I think it was my door. It was something that opened you up to pursuing truth, pursuing a deeper, something deeper than what you were presented with at the time of opening that door to begin with, when you began your journey of self-actualization. And I think this is just important. I think this is where we're all leading to. I think it's our destiny. I think we're all on a path of going through this cycle of self-actualization, self-mastery. And we all have our own path to follow. And we have to follow our bliss. We have to follow our passion in order to really be presented with the opportunities in life to come to that understanding of this is just a journey. It's just your quest for this life. And if you follow that wholeheartedly, like you said, with the heart, with the toroidal field, get that electromagnetic field around you, get it in resonance with the earth, get it in resonance with the universe, as above, so below, you begin to mirror that of the heavens above, and it's all internal. Everything that we see on the external is a reflection of what's on the internal. So when you're there and all you want to do is look in the mirror and look good with your muscles and you're aesthetically pleasing to the masses, that's just the exterior. If you're not doing any of the interior work, then when that body begins to crumble, there's going to be nothing there to hold that structure in place afterwards. And yeah, I just love listening to what you've got to say, Steve, because everything you're saying, it's like likewise. it's running through my own mind, and I'm sort of transmuting it into my own sort of breakdown of what you're saying. And it's
your show is a really important platform. I'm really glad that you reached out to me and invited me, because you know, it's a format to discuss, you know, information and ideas that are not necessarily expected or commonly spoken about. And so it's a positive development, and we all do our part in contributing. So I'm really glad that you had me on and we were able to go in that direction, because I just feel that the amount of information I can offer, and if it's just going to be used for fitness, I feel that it limits the possibility.
And that's the same. It's the same. Like, everyone gets their tag. Everyone gets their image of what they get, their stamp of who everyone believes they are. For you, I mean, for a lot of your career, everyone believed that you were the kettlebell guy. For Paul Cech, everyone thought he was the medicine ball guy, or the Swiss ball guy, sorry. And everyone kind of gets their stamp of who you initially present yourself to the world as. But again, social media is a prime example of that, of who you are presented to the world as. It's not necessarily you. That's a small fraction of who you are. You only see the picture image of the front cover of the book. You're not seeing the depth. You're not seeing the chapters near the end of the book. And it takes something like this where we can really get into it and people can see what you're about. People can see that there's more to you than meets the eye. There's more to everybody than meets the eye. And all it takes is a good conversation in order to be able to, allow people to see that. And I've really enjoyed it today, Steve. I've just clocked the time then, and we've gone past the time that I thought I had you for. So we will wrap this one up now. But I very much appreciate your time for coming on and sharing your insights.
Pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, man. And like I said at the beginning, I've looked up to you for a long time, and it was great to have you on and seeing that. Yeah, I knew that there was a lot of depth to you, because I follow you outside of this. And
where are you in England?
I'm based in Bristol, which is on the southwest coast.
Okay. Yes.
So if you're ever here in London, I will.
Yeah, I should be in London probably later this year. We're gonna keep in contact and
For sure.
See about connecting. In person.
I would love that, Steve.
And I like visiting London. It's overdue. It's been a little while, so.
For sure. So just to finish this one off then, Steve, for everyone that has enjoyed what we've had to say, what you've had to say, whereabouts can they keep in touch with you? If you've got, obviously you said that.
Follow me on Instagram and, you know, reach out to me there. That's a great format. That's my name, Steve Cotter, IKFF.
Mm-hmm.
And also my YouTube channel, that's the IKFF channel. And website is IKFF.
Okay, cool. I'll throw all that into the show notes as well. So, guys, hopefully you've enjoyed this one. That is episode 49 in the books. As always, guys, I try to bring you some depth to all the subjects we cover. I'm trying to show you that there is more to this realm, more to this life than meets the eye. There really is. And fitness is just one aspect of it. It's cool to be in shape. It's cool to be the strong guy like everyone wants to be. But fitness is a door to something much deeper. It's what enables you to connect to your body. And when you connect to your body, that's when the magic happens, because then you get to see the universe for what it is. And hopefully, this podcast has opened your eyes up a little bit, guys. For further inspection, you've got all Steve's details. Other than that, calling this one a night. Guys, stay woke as fuck, and I'll catch you on the next episode.